translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shaunak Muni asked, after killing his enemies who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhisthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the greatest of all men of religion. Thus, he was not at all inclined to fight with his cousins for the sake of enjoying the kingdom. He fought for the right cause because the kingdom of Hastinapur was his rightful inheritance and his cousins wanted to usurp it for themselves. He fought, therefore, for the right cause under the guidance of Lord Sri Krishna. But he could not enjoy the results of his victory because his cousins were all killed in the fight. He therefore ruled over the kingdom as a matter of duty, assisted by his younger brothers. The inquiry was important for Shaunaka Rishi, who wanted to know about the behavior of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was at ease to enjoy the kingdom. Om ajnana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tadati svapadantikam namo om vishnu padaya krishna pishtaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine namaste sarasvate deve gaurvani pracharine nirvishesha sunyavadi parshachate svitarine Vancha kalpata rubyasya kripa sindubya evacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnaya Putanaya Shimate Bhakti Charu Swami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnaya Putanaya Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Hare Krishna. So first of all, I would request blessings from all the senior devotees in the audience to bless me so I can say something useful. So we just finished a wonderful chapter 9. Hearing about the passing away of, the glorious passing away of Lord, of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna. And we have so many wonderful realizations from so many wonderful devotees at the manor. So we're now starting chapter 10. We're on text 1. I thought it'd be useful to just go over an overview of this chapter. It's one of the shorter chapters, only 36 verses. Text 1 we just read is an inquiry by Shaunaka Rishi. And then the rest of up to 6, Sudha Goswami describes the happy kingdom of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Then 7 to 14 describes the intensity of Lord Krishna's influence as he prepares to depart for Dwaraka. 15 to 19, it talks about Lord Krishna appropriately, how Lord Krishna was appropriately honored with musical instruments, showers of flowers, prayers, etc., etc. 20 to 31, the Hastinapur ladies have a discussion about Lord Krishna's glories. A very nice section, this. And then 32 to 36, Lord Krishna proceeds for Dwaraka. So coming to this text, Shaunaka Muni asked, after killing his enemies who desired to to us to use up, I always struggle with this word, use up this his rightful inheritance. How did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhisthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. In the text, the one interesting word I thought was bhojana. So bhojana, we normally think about prasad, food. But in this case, Prabhupada translates it in a large and sort of wider meaning, saying acceptance of necessities. So I thought that was interesting. So Shaunak Rishi is curious to know about how Maharaj Yudhisthira is going to rule his subjects. And the statement he makes is that surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. So as we know, Maharaj Yudhisthira is a very exalted personality, and he did not really want to engage in this war in Kurukshetra. But Krishna finally convinced the Pandavas that it was the right thing to do. It was fighting for Dharma, and it was fighting under the instruction of Krishna. So he reluctantly, he did actually fight. But he was, as we heard in a few verses towards the end of chapter 9, he was very, very aggrieved. And even Lord Krishna couldn't pacify him. In the end, when he spoke, when they went to meet Bhishmadev, lying on the bed of arrows, Bhishmadev was able to somehow convince him. Actually, this was a plan for Krishna to glorify Bhishmadev. So, obviously, Yudhisthira Maharaj was not happy, although he was the emperor, but he still obviously was thinking about all the people who had to die in the battle of Kurukshetra. So Prabhupada actually gives that answer briefly in the purport. He says that he could not enjoy the result of his victory because his cousins were all killed in the fight. He therefore ruled over the kingdom as a matter of duty. So, duty, dharma. Yudhisthira was Dharma Raj, son of Dharma, son of Yamraj. So duty was his primary duty, primary thing. He was always very, very conscious about righteousness and duty. It is said that he was known as Ajata Shatru, meaning one who has no enemy, because he always abided by Dharma. Nobody hated him. There was no enemies. This little phrase, Ajata Shatru. Shatru means, of course, enemy. And Ajata means unborn. So it could be literally translated as one whose enemy was never born. So, Maharaj Yudhisthira was a personification of goodness, it is said. And by constant service to Lord Krishna, he was free from all desires for sense gratification and personal wealth, fame, power, etc., etc. And this state of complete selflessness made him a worthy emperor for the whole world. His true nature was shown by his unflinching adherence to satya and dharma, truth and righteousness. These were more precious to him than his own family or any material pursuits or anything else, or any royal ambitions indeed. So some examples of his adherence to satya and dharma, I was just going through. When Prabhupada gives such a short purport, I always find it difficult to find material. But in this case, I thought I'd focus on Maharaj Yudhisthira's examples of how staunchly he adhered to the satya and dharma principles. So the first example was at the war. When Krishna realized that Dronacharya was fighting so powerfully that he was not going to be able to be defeated. After all, Dronacharya was the teacher. He was the guru for all the Pandavas and Kauravas. He's the one who taught them warfare. So in that sense, he was the master of warfare. So no doubt, he was proving undefeatable. So then Krishna hatched a plan, and he said that if we declare that Aswadhama, Dronacharya's son, has died, that is the only thing which will momentarily distract him. And at that time, we can perhaps kill him. So Yudhishthira, of course, Satyavadi, he didn't want anything to do with this. No way he was going to party to any blatant lie like this. So as a compromise, what Krishna said was, okay, Bhima, there is an elephant called Aswadhama. So you go and kill him, and then just loudly announce that Aswadhama is dead. And then our purpose will be served, and we're not lying. So Yudhishthira Maharaj also will be happy. So this happened. Bhima killed the elephant, and he came to the battlefield, and he loudly announced, Aswadhama hato, Aswadhama hato, Aswadhama is killed. Aswadhama is killed. Now, Dronacharya, of course, he was very, very intelligent. And he knew that out of all the Pandavas, and also he knew that part of warfare was also this kind of lies. You would distract the enemies by some kind of illusion, some kind of, you know, lies. So he wanted to reconfirm, and he knew that the only person from the Pandavas who could actually speak the truth would be Yudhishthira Maharaj. So he comes over to Yudhishthira Maharaj, and he says, can you confirm what Bhima was saying? So Yudhishthira Maharaj says, Aswadhama hato na naro vana kunjaraj na naro narova nakunjarova. Aswadhama hato narova nakunjarova. So nara eva kunjar eva. So nara means person. Kunjara means an elephant. So he was saying that Aswadhama is dead, but I'm not sure whether it's the person or the elephant. Now, if Yudhishthira Maharaj heard the whole statement, he would realize that this is a fraud. So Krishna, also knowing Yudhishthira's heart, he knew that he's not going to be able to just say Aswadhama hato. He will have to accompany it with some adjoiner. So what he did was he inspired the hearts of the people who were playing the drums and the kartalas and the cymbals to start playing loudly as soon as Yudhishthira completed saying Aswadhama hato, the noise increased and the rest of the sentence was drowned. So this way, Dronacharya got really distracted, and for a moment he dropped his weapons, and this is how he was killed. So you can see Yudhishthira Maharaj, even at that time, knowing that if he didn't say this lie, the Pandavas would have been finished by Dronacharya. But still, the Satya was more important to him than his own life or the life of the Pandavas. The second incident that I was thinking about was when Duryodhan makes a plan and poisons Bhima. And they throw him into the river. And he ends up deep, deep in the river. He ends up in the kingdom of the snakes. And the snakes are biting him. But by these snake bites, what's happening is that the effect of the poison that Duryodhan had fed him got neutralized. So, and then he meets Vasuki, and then he, of course, Vasuki gives him the soma juice, which he drinks. And he then becomes, he gets the strength of, it is said, somewhere it says 1,000 elephants, somewhere it says 100 elephants, but even 10 elephants will do. But he became as strong as, as hundreds of elephants, right? And then when he went back to the Pandavas and Kunti, he was really mad. And he says, I'm going to kill Duryodhana. The first time I see him, I'm going to kill him. And here again, Yudhishthira says, no. You can't kill him. He's our cousin, after all. You can't kill him. And Bhima says, but he tried to kill me. He says, that's fine. That's his nature. You can't follow his nature. We can't do it. So you see, anybody else, if this was happening to me, I would be out for revenge straight away. But again, sticking to his principles. The third instance was when the Pandavas were exiled for 12 years. At one point, Duryodhan wanted to actually see how they were doing and actually gloat in their misery. So Pandavas were in the one particular place by the sort of bank of a lake. And what he did was he went with his entourage and then he made a camp on the other side or other bank of the lake just to observe what the Pandavas, how they were suffering and to just gloat about it. So this was going on. But in the meantime, some Gandharvas arrived there and they claimed right to the spot. And they said, this is our spot. You can't be here. And Duryodhana, of course, as his wont is, started to argue. And that argument got worse. In the end, it ended into a big fight. And the Gandharvas were finishing the Kaurava army. In the end, they captured Duryodhana. So someone from the Kauravas camp ran across to the Pandava side, and he said, you go do something to help here because, you know, these Gandharvas are destroying us. Please help. So Yudhishthira says, Bhima, Arjuna, go. Let's go and rescue Duryodhana. And Bhima and Arjuna say, what are you saying? This guy has been a thorn on our side all our life. This is a chance for us to get rid of him and without us doing anything about it. Let the Gandharvas take care of him. He says, no. He is our cousin. We cannot, this is our duty to protect our family. Go, this is my order, go and protect him. And of course then Arjuna goes and Arjuna fires. He fires so many arrows so quickly that these Gandharvas actually, they had flying chariots. And they had put Duryodhana on one of the chariots and they were actually flying off, taking him away. But these arrows, so many, so quickly, they actually created a cage around these chariots. And trapped the Gandharvas. This way, Arjuna was able to rescue Duryodhana. And out of gratitude, being a Kshatriya, as much as he didn't want to, Duryodhana asked him for a boon. And Arjuna said, I don't want anything now. I'll ask something if I need later. And this boon, as we know, he used to get back those five arrows that were meant to kill them, kill the Pandavas. Then the fourth incident was when Duryodhana visits Indraprastha and they take him around to this magnificent mystic hall which was built by Maya Danava. Maya Danava was saved by Arjuna from the forest fire and as a gift to Arjuna, he built this wonderful mystic assembly hall. It was actually at that time the largest assembly hall in the whole world, and it had these mystic features. So when Duryodhana was walking in there, there was parts that looked like water. So he would hold his dhoti up and then try to walk across, and he realized as soon as he got down there, it actually is dry. There's no water there. It was just an illusion created. Beautifully done. So they thought, oh, that's fine. It just looks like water, but it's not water. So he walks on, and the next spot, similar spot he comes to, he thinks, ah, this is the same, this looks like water. And of course, that was water, and he just drops into it. And at that time, the ladies, including Draupadi, they started to laugh. And again, Yudhishthira at the time stopped them. He says, no, you cannot insult our family member. Again, sticking to their righteousness. So, and the last thing that came to my mind was that after all that was done, at the end of the war, so many people died. And still, at the end, he offered, not just offered, he took Gandhari and uncle's name? Dhritarashtra, sorry. Dhritarashtra into his home, looked after them. Not just looked after them, he gave them respect that was due to an elderly member of the family, despite what they've done. So again, it takes a very, very big heart to do something like this. So this reminded me of one of the verses that we were doing in the Bhakti Vaibhava course recently, the symptoms of a saintly person. This is a verse from the third canto, chapter 25, text 21. This describes the symptoms that Maharaj Yudhishthira always displayed. And the verse goes, Titikshava Karunika Suhrida Sarvadehinam Ajata Satrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhubhushana Shri Shri Radha Gokula Dand Ki Jai Sita Ram Lakshma Hanuman Ki Jai Shri Shri Gaunita Ki Jai Jagadula Sira Prabhupada Ki Jai. So beautiful verse. Titikshava, meaning tolerant. This is the symptoms of a sadhu. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was a kshatriya. Of course, he had all the kshatriya symptoms too. He was chivalrous. He was powerful. He was always victorious. He was, a leader, generous. These are the symptoms of a kshatriya. But at the same time, because in those days, and Yudhishthira Maharaj was a Rajarshi, which means he was a Raja. He was more than a Raja, of course, he was an emperor. But Rajarshi, meaning he was a Raja, but he was saintly at the same time. So these are the symptoms of a saintly person. Titikshava, meaning tolerant. Karunika, merciful. Surida sarva dehinam. Surida means friendly, very friendly. Surid. It's like a very close friend. You know, a friend, you can have an acquaintance, just a hello, hello friend. Or you can have a friend who you sort of spend time with. But the dearest friend is Surid. Surid is somebody who actually, in his heart, has all good wishes for you, all good thoughts for you. So he was Surid, friendly to all living entities. And then this phrase we saw before it was Ajata Shatru. In this verse is Ajata Shatrava. And he says he has no enemies. So like we said, his enemies were not born. And Shantaha, peaceful. Of course, this is a conflict here because as a Kshatriya, he doesn't always be peaceful. A Kshatriya cannot always remain peaceful. Kshatriya has to get angry when there is need. So he was Kshatriya, so this peacefulness perhaps was now and then. But then he abides by scriptures all the time. Always abides by scriptures. That is sadhava. And he says, and his characteristics are sublime. Bhushana, sublime characteristics. This also reminded me about the story about a brahmana who was in a river and he was doing prayers. So he happened to see a scorpion in the water. Now a scorpion can live underwater for a few hours, but that's all. Then he needs to get out. So he could see, this brahmana could see that this scorpion was struggling. He was in the middle of the river and he was struggling because he needed to get out. So what he does, he puts his hands into the water, picks up the scorpion, and the first thing that happens is the scorpion bites him because the scorpion is agitated, right? So he picks him up. Scorpion doesn't realize this person is trying to help me. He bites the sadhu. The sadhu drops the scorpion, just like reflex, and is back in the water. Again, he goes and picks him up. Again, the scorpion bites him. Again, he leaves him. 3 or 4 times this happened, and there was another brahmana next near him saying, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Every time you pick him up, he's biting you. Why do you keep doing this? Why do you self-harming yourself so much? He's already bitten you 4 or 5 times. Why don't you just let it go? So as we were saying earlier, the brahmana said, my dharma is to be kind. I'm a brahmana, so I have to be compassionate. That's my dharma. So I am just doing my dharma. But its dharma is to be vicious. So I can't do anything about his dharma. He will keep doing his dharma, but I cannot stop doing my dharma because he's doing his dharma. I will do this until I save him. So this is what Maharaj Yudhishthira was like. So this is what I had to say about this particular verse. But as we mentioned earlier, today is an auspicious day, the disappearance day, of Lokanath Goswami. So we'll speak the next few minutes about his pastimes. Lokanath Goswami was born in the Jeshur district in Bangladesh, in a well-to-do family. And this region must be very, very pious, very spiritually potent region, because Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Anupama also were born in this region. The father's, Lokanath Goswami, his father's name was Padmanabh Chakravarti, and his mother's name was Sita Devi. So, at some point, as a young lad, he was attracted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji's philosophy, and he decided to travel to Navadvip. And when he arrived there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, realizing this wonderful soul, embraced him. And he stayed there for a little while. But apparently, within a very short time, you know, Lokanath Goswami has been longing to stay with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was his dream. And he finally made it. But just after a few days, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives him an instruction. He says, I want you to go to Vrindavan, which is thousands of miles away. I want you to go to Vrindavan. Not thousands, maybe 1,500 miles away. He says, but why? I came here to be with you. Why are you pushing me away from you? He says, no, I'm pushing you closer to me, because very soon I'm going to go to Katwa and take sannyas. And after sannyas, I'm going to come to Vrindavan. So I want you to go there and prepare the place for me, and then I'll spend all the time with you. So although he still was very disappointed about having to leave, but he obeyed the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and prepared to leave. Before he left, though, he went to every senior devotee in Navadvip, every senior Vaishnava, and paid obeisances and asked for blessings. So this is a lesson that we have to take. Like, we go to a holy dham like Vrindavan, Mayapur, and what do? We just get a ticket and get on a plane and just go. But this is a lesson. Before we go to a holy dham, we should take blessings from seniors that are around us. Senior Vaishnavas bless us and give us the sukriti to have a successful visit to the dham. Anyway, after paying obeisances to all the senior devotees, he then went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it is described very beautifully that he fell down at his feet, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji's feet were all drenched by the tears pouring out of Lokanath Goswami's eyes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lifts him up, embraces him, and then finally he leaves. He takes this long walk to Vrindavan. He gets to Vrindavan, and he waits, and he waits, and he waits, and he waits some more. There's no news, no sign of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then one day, so in those days, of course, there was no WhatsApp, emails, nothing, not even letters. I guess people would get news by people traveling across from one place to the other. So he gets the devastating news that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, after sannyas, he was running towards Vrindavan. And what happened? Nityananda Prabhu grabbed him and distracted him and misdirected him, took him to Shantipur so that he could spend some last few moments with his mother and take some instructions. And he was told that while he was in Shantipur, his mother gave him the instruction not to go to Vrindavan. Please stay in Jagannath Puri, because people from Navadvip kept going and to and fro from Jagannath Puri. So this way, I will get some news from you. So please don't go like that. So Lokanath Swami is, Goswami is listening to all this thinking, my God, now he's not coming here, he's gone to Puri. What shall I do? My instructions are to stay here. But I can't stay away from my Lord. He seems like he's not coming here. According to his mother's instructions, he's going to live in Puri. So I should now go to Puri. So he starts to walk. A lot of walking going on here. Walking, 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 walking. He gets to the outskirts of Puri. And he hears that Mahaprabhu has left for South India. So, devastated again, he starts going towards South India. When he gets there, guess what? Mahaprabhu just finished his yatra. He's actually returned to Puri. This way, Lokanath Swami, poor guy, he's running around trying to chase Mahaprabhu. And each time he gets there, he's just like two fingers too short kind of thing. He's just gone. Finally, he goes back to Puri, following in the footsteps. Again, when he gets to Puri, he says, now he's just left for Vrindavan. Oh my God. He's going to Vrindavan. His instruction to me was to go and receive him, prepare the place for him. And I can't do the service because now he's already on the way. Let me try and get there faster. He ran. He practically ran all the way to Vrindavan. And what happens? He gets the news. Just 2 weeks ago, Mahaprabhu went back. He finished his yatra. He'd arrived at night, and he decided, first thing in the morning, I now walk back. Must be a very, very fit person, right, to walk so much. He says he decides to go back. But during the night, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes into his dream, and he says, stay. Don't come here. Stay in Vrindavan. Stay in Vrindavan and search out my pastime place, Krishna's pastime places, and soon some more devotees will come and join you. You don't need to come here. So he then, of course, accepted his instructions. He made the place out of the 12 forests that he was wandering around. He found a place called Khadirvan in the province of Chakravan, which is near a village called Umrao. And he made his place under a secluded tree on the banks of Kishori Kunda. It was a simple tree, nothing else. That's where he stayed. And at that time, Bhugarbha Goswami, now I'm not sure whether they traveled together, how they met, but Bhugarbha Goswami was also there. He was also an ardent follower of Mahaprabhu. So the two of them. Don't forget, by the time that Lokanath Goswami goes to Vrindavan, no other Gaudiya Vaishnava has been to Vrindavan. He was the very first one to get there. He was the very first one to arrive there. And then there's talk about Bhugarbha Goswami also arriving. So he would come and visit Lokanath Goswami. They would remain together for a few days, do the bhajan together, and then Bhugarbha Goswami would move on. But Lokanath Swami would just remain. He would just remain there. But in his heart, he cherished the thought of having deities to worship. So one time, one night, somebody, a brahmana appears, hands him something, and just disappears. Then when he looks down, he sees it's a beautiful deity of Radha Krishna. Exquisite, wonderful deity of Radha Krishna. And he's thinking, who was this person who gave me these deities? This is my wish, to get worshipful deities, and somebody is giving, who was that? But actually it was Krishna himself who could see what was in his heart. He himself came and delivered the deities to him. So he then started to worship this. The first thing the deities told him is that we've been here a long time. I'm hungry. Please make food for me. Please offer me something. So he ran to the village of Umrao, begged some rice and grains and fruits. He prepared a bhoga. He offered it to the Lord. They're called Radha Vinod deities. Beautiful deities. And he offered the bhoga. He collected lots of flowers. He made a bed of flowers for the Lord to rest in. And this way he kept worshipping the deities of Radha Vinod. He even made a little cloth bag, which used to hang with a strap around his neck, and that was his temple. He carried Radha Vinod around wherever he went. The deities were about so big, not very big, so easily fitted on his chest. And this is how he went. The villagers in Umrao sometimes asked him to let's build a nice kuti, nice temple for him. He said, no. He didn't want any of that. He just wanted to have the lordships with them all the time. So this is how he worshipped the deities very, very faithfully. Later on, Rupa Goswami came, Sanatan Goswami came, Jiva Goswami came, the Goswamis came. They then took him from Kadirvan to Vrindavan, and they all lived together and created all these scriptures and excavated all the places of worship, Krishna's places. So he was party to all that. He was party to a lot of literature, apparently. But one thing, he was so humble that he always said, I do not want anybody to mention my name in any of the scriptures. So a lot of the books that we read nowadays, seemingly from Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, he had a major hand in them, but he never wanted any credit for it. Therefore, it is said that Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, also took a lot of information from him, advice from him when he was compiling the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But he says, yes, I will give you the information on one condition, do not mention my name in it. Kaviraj Goswami does mention it very briefly, but that's why we don't read so much about him. So there's more to say about this wonderful personality, but it's 8:30, so I will stop now. I request any comments, additions, corrections, please. Thank you.